Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the PPSAI Working Group call on the 23rd of December 2014. On the call today, we have Sarah Wild, Ralph Sherman, Richard Gleaning, Osvaldo Navoa, Tatiana Kontsova, Todd Williams, James Liddell, Don Blumenthal, Darcy Sunwell, Phil Corwin, Griffin Barnett, Phil Gertz, David Heasley, David Hughes, Frank Mischlich, Stephanie Pierre, Kathy Kleiman, Justin Macy, and Volker Greiman. We have received apologies from Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, Holly Raich, Karen Malin-Terraville, Victoria Schlecker, Steve McCallitz, Graham Banton, and Jim Bykoff. And from staff, we have Mary Wong, Danielle Angela, and myself, Nancy Kirby. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Don.
I appreciate it. Here we go. I appreciate everybody who called in today. This wasn't on our original calendar. We went into the holidays, but figured it was worth taking some time. We still have some unresolved issues, or I'm not even sure how unresolved they are, but I think this needs to be clarified a bit on G. A little bit maybe on F, although I don't want to get too deeply into that because I understand there are some discussions going on between some interesting constituencies trying to come up with some acceptable language for all. Maybe a lingering issue from E that I'll get to if we have some extra time. In any event, though, what I suggested yesterday in my email was rather than go through point by point, if you look at the I'm not going to go page, specify pages necessarily because it depends on what people are looking at. If you look at the potential recommendations that Mary laid out here, that I think capture our discussion really well, I think we can cover it by doing an overview, maybe, rather than going through piece by piece. The registrar processes, I think, provide a very good model for what privacy proxy can use, but privacy proxy customers are not necessarily, or may have, not tilting the discussion, may have considerations that are different from registrar relationships. So overall, I guess, what I wanted to do is just ask for thoughts. I mean, we've got a number of points here where there is clear overlap. And just ask for thoughts on where people think that the the registrar de-accreditation processes, as they've been laid out in calls, will not cover privacy proxy requirements. I'm trying to see the... Okay. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. Are we... Just because I... maybe I'm a little confused. Maybe I need some coffee. But are we specifically discussing now the model procedures for registrars for de-accreditation or termination of a privacy proxy service provider, or are we talking about something broader?
We're talking about the registrar de-accreditation and the extent to which those procedures are appropriate for privacy proxy provider deaccreditation.
Okay. I thank you for clarifying. I have some thoughts on that, but I will stand down because I see Mary has her hand up, and so if you would rather go to her first, I'll wait my turn.
Okay, Mary?
Okay, thanks, Don, and thanks, James. Just to say that at the moment in the draft report, we have basically a statement that says the, you know, registrar model could be a good starting point. And there's a couple of specific points that we're picking up on, but essentially this working group has not designed an accreditation or a deaccreditation model. So essentially what we're saying is that the registrar model could be a good starting point, and here are a few points that we would like to see in the accreditation model for privacy proxy service providers. So, you know, one question is, if this working group wants to delve a little bit deeper and develop policy recommendations, it certainly could, and we may have some time to do that, but at the moment that's what we have, and that's all we have.
And do we need more? Or different? James, back to you.
Thanks, Don, and thanks, Mary, for clarifying. James speaking for the transcript. So I had some thoughts here about some different ways we could approach this. Some, I think, track very closely to existing registrar deaccreditation or termination processes, but some are a little different. And I think that, I would love to have like a brainstorming session. I don't know if it's appropriate for this call, but, you know, some ideas might be notification, like you have listed here. One potential way to do this would be mass cancellation of a privacy service. Now, I don't think that translates into a very good customer experience, but it is one way to address this if the registrar is still in good standing with the privacy proxy services losing their accreditation. A third approach might be to have some sort of interim contact so that ICANN or some other similar to the eBureau for the emergency backend registry operator, where all of the affected registrations would be listed under this sort of neutral proxy until they had an opportunity to choose a new service or as a temporary basis or holding position. And then another one would be to actively seek out a successor service to take over each of those registrations. And I think that, you know, it's kind of a sliding scale. Some are easy, but kind of, not a very good customer experience, not a very good, maybe desirable from the part of view of the consumer that purchased the service, not a good protection of their private information. And then others are more robust protection of the private information, but are going to cause, going to take more time, going to be more complex, and going to cost more money. So my thinking here was, rather than include the recipe in our recommendations, would it be possible to require a privacy proxy service as a condition of its accreditation to have a transition plan on file with ICANN as part of their accreditation, as an addendum to their accreditation agreement, and say, you know, look, if you are ever, if you are ever deaccredited or terminated, we will execute this transition plan, whether they've designated a successor or whether they just cancel service or whatever, and that they would have to post that somewhere or something and let the consumers choose. It's just a thought here. Rather than actually trying to solve this problem, we simply require that there be a solution at the ready in case this scenario develops. That's just something I'm just throwing out there because I can tell you that from personal experience, when a registrar is deaccredited or terminated, ICANN, I think, has a fairly solid plan in place. But we have seen that finding that successor registrar to take over management of those domain names is not always straightforward. And even when it works, it sometimes takes a little bit longer than anticipated, and for the customers that are affected, you know, they've done nothing wrong. Maybe they just chose the wrong service provider. They can experience lengthy interruptions in the management of their domain name. So I think that it's just something to keep in mind and make sure that when we're putting these things together, that we are putting ourselves in the shoes of the people who have signed up for these services, and don't want to have one of those experiences where they're shut off from their domain names for extended periods of time. So that's my little spiel there. I don't know if it's 100% useful, but just wanted to get that on the record. Thanks.
Appreciate it. I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but I'll just say it's very helpful. I think it has the potential to remove a lot of complexity in what we wind up presenting for comment. We've talked quite a bit about terms of service, and this is just that could present customer choice, and this is another example of it. Any thoughts generally or comments on James' proposal there? Okay, Mary.
Thanks, Don, and thanks, James, for all the suggestions. I guess I just had a question for the group generally and, of course, for James, too, because one of the potential recommendations we have here is that in the event of deaccreditation of a privacy proxy provider, someone has suggested that the customer might be able to choose its own new provider. So my question is, if we do recommend that an accredited provider has a transition plan on file with ICANN, would that preclude the customer choosing its own new provider?
Okay, I was going to provide a thought, but James?
Oh, Don, please go ahead.
No.
No, I don't think any.
Your idea. I'd rather hear your answer.
James speaking for the transcript. And Mary, I don't think anything. And again, we're still sort of in brainstorming mode, and I don't think any of those ideas preclude that ability. There may be an intermediary step where an ICANN designated or a successor service provider is managing the privacy proxy service on an interim basis to provide continuity of access to the domain name, and that may be a temporary situation until that's resolved. But nothing would stop a customer from choosing ultimately a different one and then moving to that. At least that's how it works for domain names and transfers. You know, nothing stops you from transferring after an ICANN mandated transfer. The only thing I would put out there is we would have to look very carefully at these, and if we require service providers to put plans together, the two issues that immediately come to mind that make this a little different would be any pending disputes or UDRP or any of these other mechanisms that we've built in about contact and relay and reveal. We'd have to figure out where in the sequence those are executed before the contact information changes, and then we'd also have to be very, very careful about this new contact authorizing any transfers, because I could see if I don't mean to kick ICANN when they're down a little bit, but if there was ever any sort of intrusion or data breach into this system, that it could cause a mass theft of domain names if there was some sort of an interim proxy established. So one recommendation would be that route would automatically lock names against any kind of transfer. So, but to answer your question directly, Mary, I wouldn't expect that. Ultimately, there may be a delay in consumers executing that choice, but there wouldn't be precluded.
Great. I appreciate that. Yeah, you covered at least part of what I was thinking, so it's always best to have, like I said, it was your idea. Best to have you answer Volker.
Yes, thank you, Don. Just one question. I think it hasn't been covered yet, but I joined late a bit, so I might have missed it. One problem that I also see with an automated takeover by another entity is the question of the registration agreement with the registrar. Keeping in mind that many of those privacy service providers are not registrar affiliated, they would actually be the party that the registrar knows who he's concluding the registration agreement with. So we would have a situation where the registration agreement in place would automatically, if we had an automated transfer of domain ownership or the supposed domain ownership of by the private property service provider, the registrar would suddenly be faced with having a registration agreement with the party that he has not agreed to with that registration agreement, or the registration agreement would simply not be valid because the other party has never agreed to that with the registrar, unless that's part of the takeover process. So that's something that would have to also be looked at.
Okay, I didn't catch all of that. Forgive me if this sounds like a dumb question.
Not at all.
So we're talking.
In place with the registrant, and in some cases where the privacy proxy service provider is not affiliated with the registrar, the only entity that the registrar knows that he has an agreement with is the privacy proxy service provider, who in this customer relationship with the registrar acts as registrant and the party that has the contract. Now, there might be underlying contractual obligations to an underlying party, but for the registrar, in such a situation, for all effects and purposes, the privacy proxy service provider would be the registrant. And having an automated transfer from one privacy proxy service provider to another, in case of a deaccreditation or going out of new sale or whatever else there may be as the underlying cause for such an automated transfer, the registrar might be faced with a situation where the entity that he has the registration agreement with changes, and that may not be desirable in all cases.
Okay. I'm glad you raised that, because we have at times tried to identify where issues are going to be different for unaffiliated privacy proxy providers. Do you have any thoughts on how we would address that and how we're putting this together?
Quite honestly, this is a bit of a puzzler for me as well. That only arises when you do have an automated takeover by an entity. However that might work. If you do not have that automated takeover procedure, then there would be a situation where the registrant would be able to choose whether to delete or the underlying registrant in this case would be able to choose whether to delete or transfer to the domain to a different privacy proxy service provider, which may cause also a registrar transfer. So in that case, there would be a situation where a new registration agreement could be concluded. Just with the automated one, I have a bit of an issue with it.
Okay. And I'm just hesitating here because I'm thinking this through just a second. When you say automated, and anybody else, please feel free to jump in. (clears throat) I'm just glancing over to Frank's comments here. When you say automated transfer, now, when we're talking about a deaccreditation, there would be a process. And there would theoretically... I need to think out loud here for a second. There would be a process, and theoretically, I would think if we're following the accreditation model for the registrars, there'd be the ability of a privacy proxy provider to refuse to pick up the registrations. So I guess where do the issues arise, I guess, on the registrar end?
Exactly. I mean, when we're talking about an automated process similar to the registrar process, where a registrar takes over the registrations of the accredited registrar in bulk, then that would be, conversely, if that would be were to be adapted to a privacy proxy service provider, a new privacy proxy service provider would automatically take over those domain names in bulk, and regardless of what the agreement between the former registrant or privacy proxy service provider and the registrar in place. So the registrar should at least be informed and given the opportunity to refuse accepting registrations from a certain provider, or have a say in that. By the way, this is also a problem that I see with the automated takeover and the accredited registrars, because in many cases the registrants are only informed after the transfer has occurred. So basically you would have registrations in place with no registration agreement. You do have registration in place with no valid registration agreement between the current registrar of record who then holds the domain name and the registrant whose domain name has just been auto-transferred. So this is something that's also in place, already a problem in my view, in the current takeover process for deaccredited registrars, and I hope we would not make the same mistake in this one as well.
Okay, appreciate it. That's helpful. You're in the afternoon, I'm in the morning. I guess I just haven't quite woken up. So we've got a two-layer issue here of wanting to accept the change, the new proxy privacy and potential new registrars, I see. I appreciate it. Any follow-up on Volker's point there? James's other thoughts? Okay. We have one very clear issue here in terms of where we might have a problem, which is the secondary obligation when we've got a non-affiliated privacy proxy provider. That's it. James has presented a really interesting suggestion on how we address, potentially could address the issues, avoid complexity and go back to customers having maximum choices in the providers that they choose, informed consent, I guess. But Carlton, that's the point. We're assuming Volker's point was a good concrete example of where a registrar and a proxy provider are not affiliated. But let me throw something else out here that I'm not sure we've discussed. if a registrar is deaccredited, is there some experience on what happens with an affiliated privacy proxy provider? Would it go under also? Not go under, but... would it stop providing privacy proxy services, James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. I was thinking about that as well. And while it certainly makes less and less common sense to have a, I think the answer is not necessarily. If the privacy proxy service is still in good standing and hasn't run afoul of any of its obligations, then that essentially becomes an independent or an unaffiliated privacy proxy service that probably needs to figure out what it wants to do with its life, either to exit the business or, in an orderly fashion, or to become a reseller of a registrar or something that it would need to do to, replace the fact that it's no longer an accredited registrar. I don't have an answer, but I don't think that losing one would necessarily cause you to lose the other accreditation.
Thanks. That was my instinct, but as a follow-up, though, would we want to recommend an affiliated? Maybe this isn't different, but the affiliated privacy proxy also have statements of, following the model you suggested, have statements of what happens if the affiliated registrar loses accreditation or leaves the business for whatever reason. But it might be the same situation. James?
Yes, Don James speaking. I think it would be the same situation. I think we should also, while we are, of course, focused naturally on what happens when ICANN, as an enforcement action, takes away or suspends or terminates accreditation, I mean, it's possible that an existing, let's call it, combination entity, a registrar and a privacy proxy service provider, would voluntarily want to stop being a registrar and move to an unaffiliated model, and I think we should allow for that.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, it's been useful in just looking at the practical side of things. Following the chat here, but in the meantime, are there any other issues in this list of potential recommendations where we might have to address some issues that aren't present in registrar deaccreditation? Okay. And let me just point to one and just maybe we have addressed it. We've had on a few calls the issue raised about the ability of a stronger need for a privacy proxy registrant to choose a new provider. A greater interest in having that ability than there would be for a registrant to choose a new registrar for whatever reason. Have we addressed that here sufficiently to be confident that the privacy or whatever concerns that have been raised in the past can be addressed in the language we're suggesting? Okay, excellent. at times we all participate from a tough spot, Kathy, and that's even when we have good connections. Now, here's where I guess going to Kathy's question in chat, I guess that's what I'm trying to ask. Is what we have here sufficient to cover those concerns? And again, to some extent, we're sliding into F. Into F. The end of the document that Mary distributed. In Mary's wording, we're recommending an ESCO model for accreditation, for accreditation be helpful. And would that address any of these issues that we're concerned about? Does it tie it all into the semi-Ebro concept that you floated, James? Or really, is ESCO even a relevant consideration here in terms of protecting privacy proxy registrants there in the case of deaccreditation? James?
Hi, Don. James speaking to the transcript. I think it's going to be an important resource, but I don't know that it's going to make a determination one way or the other. I think that it will be useful in all scenarios.
ESCO or the Ebro idea, or is it semi the same?
ESCO data. I was latching on to one part of what you said. The ESCO data, having that data.
Okay. Does ESCO go even beyond? I'm branching off here a bit. Does ESCO even protection go beyond even the accreditation and termination issues that are here? I'm thinking out loud because we haven't really looked at this that much. James?
So I'm not... If I'm understanding... This is James speaking for the transcript. If I'm understanding the question, Don, I believe that I was assuming that there would be an escrow deposit requirement for privacy proxy service providers similar to that for registrars. If we haven't explicitly said so, and I apologize if I missed this, but then we should probably make sure that that's included.
Okay. So recommend and then risk as part of our accreditation model. With reasons, but not necessarily tying to this specific section. Great. Before I jump back to the chat, are there any other thoughts on these last two points in the document that went around this week, last week, whatever it was? You too, as well. Thanks for dialing in. I have to scroll up in the chat. Let me go back to the chat here. I just want to make sure I understand the points. Is it that we have not addressed privacy protection sufficiently? in terms of the mechanisms, or that we have to just make it clearer in the language? And Kathy, you know, this is the large. I mean, this is the meeting of the working group today. I mean, we can contribute by email, but I'm not sure about pulling it out for a separate discussion later. Kathy,
can you hear me, Don? Let me see if I can put it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. Happy holidays. So I think escrow, I think we talked about it early on in the working group, and I'm not sure how much we've gone from there, but this will, one of the things I was thinking of was not for the larger group, but something we need to think about over time is this idea of creating an escrow for proxy privacy may raise different issues in creating escrows for a registrar of the traditional Whois data. And one of the things I'm thinking of in particular is the moving wholesale of this data that's under data protection laws, say moving Volcker's escrowed proxy privacy data to James. That's moving across continents, that's moving across data protection regimes to a country without one. And the implications there are more than I think we can think about right now, but something we should start to think about because I think we've only touched on it.
But fundamentally, how is that any different from moving registrant data?
Because the registrant data, certainly when we're talking about the Whois data, is already public, and this is data that's being protected under, I mean, Stephanie hopefully is online. She can speak to this much more authoritatively than I am. But I think there's a huge issue. Once you've invoked that data protection, the data protection under your national laws, I don't think we can arbitrarily move that database to a country that doesn't have similar protections. I think there are implications on that statutorily as well, you know, both from our perspective, you know, looking at it from a registrant's perspective, a registrar's perspective, a proxy private service provider's perspective, but also from a national law perspective.
Okay.
Thanks.
James?
Hi, James speaks for the transcript. Kathy raises an interesting point, I think, that needs to be addressed. I think a couple of thoughts here just off the cuff was that while a jurisdiction may not have its own data protection regulations or structure or legislation, that individual service providers may be acknowledged to be operating under some sort of safe harbor provision or something like that. But I think that we should keep in mind that this escrow stuff would have already moved if it were living in an ICANN-provided escrow deposit system similar to what we're currently using for registrars with Iron Mountain. So I think this goes to your point, Don, is this is already happening. The data is encrypted, and it is deposited from, I'm going to pick on Volcker, from Volcker's customers to, assuming he, you know, his registrar uses Iron Mountain, it's wherever their servers are located, presumably in the U.S., So, I mean, to some extent, this is already underway, but I agree it is something that, we need to consider, but I don't think it's necessarily a deal breaker. I think we just need to be very careful in our recommendation.
Yeah. Thanks. Stephanie?
I'm not sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, Stephanie. It's real difficult to hear you.
Okay. Is this better?
A little bit.
Better? Okay. I'll give it a good try here. Number one, I just want to point out that the Iron Mountain deal, in my view, doesn't respect data protection law, and I believe we've already had a letter or two or three to that effect from the Data Protection Commission in Europe, and there's a lot of data protection law that just hasn't been tested with complaints. I mean, I know I'm a pain in the neck, and I've made that point a million times, but this will be one of them. I agree, though, with James that it doesn't have to be a deal breaker. What there needs to be is, number one, greater transparency for the individual, and number two, commitments on the part of the second provider, well, and the first provider for that matter, as to what they're doing with the data. So that is a matter that maybe we might want some language that reinforces that that requirement. Does that make sense? Again, that is something that I'm not sure that this working group would be specifying it if we leave it up to the privacy proxy service provider to detail in their own arrangement. Then, like everything else that has to do with privacy, it's up to the provider.
I didn't quite catch that last bit. Last bit, about the last two sentences. Clarify.
Okay. I don't know why I'm not coming in loud and clear. There must be a volume control.
Okay. Now you went on mute there.
Okay. So, yeah, it was down a little. Okay, so basically, do you want me to repeat the whole thing or just the last bit?
No, I caught most of it, but right at the end there, it drifted off more.
Okay, so I'm just wondering how deep we want to get into the details of what we require a privacy proxy service provider to have in their agreement. Because if we take James's suggestion, which I think is an excellent one, that you have to provide a almost like an official guardian for your data, then we could specify the data protection requirements that travel with the data, which is certainly a requirement in many data protection regimes. Or we could leave it open. The question is, does our group do this, or do we leave it to somewhere else?
Okay.
I'm reading this
out. If I could ask you, and then Frank asked to repeat the whole thing, if you could at least paraphrase a bit overall what you said there.
Doubtless I'm going to forget some things because I'm only operating on one cup of coffee, which is, I'm under caffeinated here. I think what I was saying was agreeing with Kathy that there is a requirement on the part of the original proxy service provider to ensure that whoever they name as a custodian for the data in the event of their demise meets the same requirements. That's a requirement in most data protection law. As you know, there's current disagreements between Europe and the United States over whether something is in safe harbor or not. But you can specify through contract the level to which it is protected and who gets access. And presumably where the data would be held. And the original point that I made was that it was a response to the observation that the data is already being escrowed. Yes, but we've already heard from data protection commissioners that that escrow is not legitimate and violates certain data protection law and constitutional rights. So, it is a fact that data protection law operates like traffic violations. You know, we slow down when we know we're going to get nailed, and we go over stop sign lines all the time in order to execute a corner. So don't assume that because something is already in practice that I can, that it complies with data protection law. That was my basic original point.
Okay, great. Thanks. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. In response or a reaction to Stephanie. So, you know, it's interesting to think of. I would have thought that if the existing data escrow requirements and model were somehow, you know, blatantly running afoul of data protection laws, that we would have heard. I would have heard more of an outcry. I mean, from European registrars and other service providers that would be affected by this. I think that, you know, as Stephanie indicated, we should probably look at ways to address this via contracts. you know, I think the key from the consumer perspective is to make sure that they're aware and they were able to make an informed and effective choice so that they, that if a service provider, a registrar, or a privacy proxy service provider is doing something with their data that they don't like, or plans to do so, that they can make a choice and choose a different service provider. I think that's key. You know, from my perspective, I think that just in practical terms, we should be mindful of these things, but again, we shouldn't necessarily allow them to completely derail some of our work or efforts here, because I'm concerned that the alternative in the scenario where a service provider is deaccredited or terminated is that they just expose all the private data and who is, because that'll be simpler and cheaper and faster, and they'll just do that. And of course, from the consumer's side of things, that's probably much worse than having having to deal with a very abstract problem of having data transferred from one jurisdiction to another. I think that having the data just, you know, here it is, you know, we're going out of business, and we'll just dump it into Whois and walk away. I'm concerned that that would become a much more attractive alternative for a failing service provider. So I would just be very careful about overburdening this process, simply because I think that the alternatives are something that the consumers would find much more or much less appealing. Thanks.
Great. Excuse me. I'm just thinking out loud. This I do that a lot. There's this new group starting up in January that is doing an overall look at privacy issues and conflicts and the who is. I'm wondering if you should make a recommendation, and some of the usual suspects, including me, are on it. It has expanded its mission to look at privacy proxy issues specifically. It might be difficult since we don't have a report and it only has 5 months to do its work, but just the timing is interesting. It would be nice to get some progress on answers on the things we're looking at here. Stephanie?
Yes, I just wanted to say I basically agree with James. One of the sort of corollary problems about data protection noncompliance is, where do you start? And in the case of ICANN, the question I'm doing research on, where do you start? And I'm not sure that making life unbearable for the people who sign on as the custodians for privacy proxy services that are deaccredited would be the best place to start, because you know, there's some other more basic things and not in compliance with. However, one of the proposals we talked about that was kind of rejected at the EWG was binding corporate rules for transfers. Solves a lot of your jurisdictional problems, and it's the kind of thing that would be appropriate for all privacy proxy service providers, and the better ones are already doing it. So if you want better behavior, this would be a good place to start. I see that Carlton has said in the chat that the privacy proxy services is assumed to be a set of conditions not necessarily related to data protection law. Maybe you're not doing it to as a method of compliance with data protection law. You're hiring a proxy, which is slightly different. Unfortunately, it's the preferred method of getting privacy protection right now at ICANN. So it has to be, because of the state of noncompliance, I don't want to get too down in the weeds here, it's the only one. So it's bearing a lot of freight, as it were. But I think that can be dealt with in a way that sort of takes on existing best practices. I don't think he's on the call today, and it's always a rash thing to say about Kaylee.
Okay, great. Thanks. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. I know we're getting up to the top of the hour, so I'll be brief. I want to throw a note of caution in here, not to discount or diminish some of the concerns that are being raised, but just because I'm afraid of where this might lead, which is that a privacy proxy service might be limited to customers in a similar data protection regime, or that they would have to set up a European entity to offer it to European customers and a Canadian entity for Canadian customers and so on and so forth. And I think that, I would hope that we are not constructing those kinds of real-world borders and allowing them to introduce friction to global service provider competition so that someone from Europe could choose an American provider or vice versa or whatever. And I'm throwing that out there because I think the way that's done now is via a contractual arrangement, which is that, in the contract it says very, or the terms of service, it says very clearly, hey, just FYI, doesn't matter if you live on an island in the middle of the Arctic Ocean, if you are using the service provider, you agree to be governed by the laws of, Arizona, for example. And that, you agree to the data protection, scheme or whatever that is in force in Arizona. And then, the consumer can say, hey, I don't like what goes on in Arizona. Or the consumer can say, I don't care. I'll accept that. And give them the ability to make an informed choice as opposed to baking these requirements into the accreditation scheme. And I'm concerned that that's kind of a tangent, but a natural departure from the conversation that we're having now about taking over is well, what about how did we get here in the first place with people, having their data stored in jurisdictions that are different from where they currently exist. So, I this data protection stuff starts to make my head hurt a little bit because I don't understand it, and I'm certainly not an expert at the level of Stephanie and others on the call. But I think it's something that we need to think about very carefully, and we need to make sure that we are presenting consumers with the ability to choose.
We are right at the top of the hour, so I'll hold off there. This has been, I think, an excellent discussion. I think we got beyond where I thought we would in terms of the privacy discussions, but I think a lot of what was discussed here will be useful to look back at where the data protection issues have come up in other contexts in the working group's history. And I also think the clarity that I think we picked up in terms of Apogee pretty well puts it. To rest. So I again appreciate, as always, appreciate attendance, but I know at least a couple people are here when they're officially on break. So to everyone, Thank you. I look forward to continuing the discussions, but we will be off next week. So talk to you only in email for a couple weeks unless somebody wants to pick up the phone or Skype or something. Have a good holiday.
Thanks, Don. Have a great holiday.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, everybody. Happy holidays, and talk to you in the new year.
Thanks, everybody. See you 2015.